Hello, and welcome to Anaphylaxis UK's Let's Talk About Allergies podcast, where we provide expert answers to common questions about allergies and anaphylaxis. Our goal is to offer valuable insights on how we can all work together to make life easier and safer for those living with allergies. Welcome back to our Anaphylaxis Awareness Week series. This week, we're focusing on our theme, the hidden battle with allergies, shining a light on the emotional challenges that often accompany allergies. It's important to remember that while we've made significant strides in understanding allergies and anaphylaxis over the years, addressing the mental health aspects is equally important. Join us as we explore these hidden battles and empower ourselves and our loved ones to navigate the emotional landscape of living with serious allergies. In this episode, we revisit the insightful interview our CEO Simon Williams had with Professor Christina Jones last year. Professor Jones is a professor in clinical health psychology and offers invaluable perspectives on the anxiety and stress that can arise from an allergy diagnosis.
Hi, Simon.
Dr. Christy Jones, how are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Now, for those that don't know you, would you like to introduce yourself quickly, please?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Dr. Christy Jones. I'm an associate professor in clinical health psychology at the University of Surrey, and I do a lot of research in the psychological impact and interventions for families and individuals with food allergy.
Wonderful. I could never have got that in as succinctly as you just did there. Thank you for that. So I was keen to have a chat with you really about, I mean, the helpline that we get, the contacts that we have, you know, people will be quite aware, you know, that worry, the anxiety, the stress that people are faced with and have to live with and deal with upon initial diagnosis, if that's the right way of saying it, or, you know, that kind of confirmation that they have a serious allergy. I'm very aware how long people have to wait to go to an allergy clinic, and it's, you know, the contact that we have on the helpline for people saying, well, what do I do? You know, how can I do this? Either, you know, it's them or it's a member of their family, but, you know, it could be quite a life changing. It's a very different way of living, isn't it? And therefore, you know, it's something that they are anxious about going out to restaurants. They're anxious about going, you know, having the children going to school. How do you get kind of, well, you know, what are the kind of things going on in the in your mind that just must be turmoil?
Yeah, I think the first thing to really acknowledge is that for most people, they will have been anxious in that kind of lead up also
of
to
course,
the diagnosis,
yes,
because that can be quite a lengthy process, especially in the UK with the National Health Service being, you know, fantastic as it is, but there are lengthy waits to actually get a diagnosis. So what we see in the literature is actually for some people, their anxiety is actually reduced when they get a diagnosis because they have some sort of certainty around actually knowing what the problem is. For other people, obviously that anxiety maintains for the reasons you've just said. You know, you have to be vigilant towards the allergen then from there on. You may, if that's your, you know, yourself as an individual, but also for your child, thinking about schools, every time you eat something, all the kind of aspects that we know about. So I think people can respond very differently. And for some people, it can be almost, okay, I know now what the issue is. I can make an action plan. And I can kind of try and adhere to that action plan. And for other people, it just might throw up more anxiety because it feels even more uncertain in terms of they don't know how quite to manage the situation or how to cope with it. I'd say as a first port of call, there are some really fantastic kind of freely available resources online. So we actually did a review of the kind of freely accessible resources, if you just kind of Google psychological support for allergy. And these have got lots of different tips and tricks from counsellors, psychologists, nurses, dietitians, consultants who all work with allergy patients and families. So I would say that's a really good first step. There might not be a huge amount of evidence behind a lot of the things, but a lot of them are common sense and unlikely to do any harm.
So are there these online tools that you mentioned there? I mean, perhaps if we have a chat later on, you can show me two or three links and then we can include them somehow in the magic of YouTube. And I don't know how you do that if people are just listening, but we'll no doubt, you know, think of a way of communicating that. Does it specifically need to be for allergies, or is it, I mean, I've come across CBT.
Yeah.
Is that, is that a kind of a catch-all behavioural change type of?
Yeah, I would say some of the resources, especially the ones that we've delivered and developed, are using kind of cognitive behavioural therapy. So that's the CBT techniques that you just mentioned. And CBT is a catch-all term for cognitive behavioural therapy, and you can apply it in different settings. And, you know, things like graded exposure, we might use in the sense of allergy, but this is not to the allergen. I have to make that absolutely crystal clear. This is to events that we might be avoiding, for example. So, you know, a typical
restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Out. So, okay. You know, you might. So a typical formulation, I'm thinking about some, you know, teenagers that I might have worked with clinically, where they come forward and they say, I've been invited to this restaurant. I'm really anxious, but I also want to go. I feel guilty that I'm not spending time with my friends. I'm worried that I'll be left out. So these are the kind of thoughts that come with that kind of initial invitation. So that's the trigger, is the invitation to this restaurant. But I'm worried about having a reaction. I'm worried that my parents are going to be worried, you know, and all of these sorts of things. And those feelings that you get, you know, there's worry, there's isolation, there's loneliness, there's low mood, there's a bit of guilt that you're not seeing friends. And obviously, people, one coping mechanism is to just not go, that those feelings and those thoughts overwhelm us to such an extent that we just don't go, which is fine. You know, what that does is we're then not anxious, we're not worried, we're not, you know, we might still feel isolated, we might still feel guilty. So some of those kind of emotions stay with us. And then the next time we're invited to a restaurant, we might respond in the same way because it worked for us in the short term. But what it doesn't do is address those feelings of isolation and guilt and low mood, because actually we might even feel worse about that in the long term. So that's the kind of graded exposure we might do to try and address actually being able to go to a restaurant. And it might be things that, you know, certain steps that we can take, or problem solving. So are there certain restaurants that we know have got very good and very clear and very transparent allergy policies that we feel we've done our homework on? Other people within the allergy community have recommended them. You know, are those sorts of things that actually improve our confidence and self-efficacy in making those decisions and going to these kind of safe spots? So I think there are things that we can do, but we know if we keep avoiding an issue like that, it just becomes worse, and those other feelings can become bigger for us and stop us from doing other things as well. I have to say also, for some people, not eating out is not a big deal. So it depends, you know, when you're thinking of that continuum, if you like, where people are being incredibly hypervigilant, avoiding lots of things, maybe impairing their own social life and quality of life. Versus kind of the other side, where they really are quite risky individuals, they're probably not paying attention to labels or ingredient lists, is problematic on the other side. And then what you have is this kind of sweet spot, pardon the pun, in the middle. But that middle could look different to different people. As I say, some people don't find not going on holiday distressing or impairing on terms of their quality of life. So I think we have to really work with the individuals in that sense. But that might be kind of one example of how CBT might be adapted to the allergy specific environment. And I would say there are other techniques that we have less evidence for. So most of the research to date has involved adaptations of cognitive behavioral therapy type interventions for allergy. We are in the process, we've just finished a mindfulness trial amongst parents of children with food allergy, which that's going to be hot off the press hopefully in 2023, and showed really strong positive results as well. And
we definitely need you back on to talk about that.
Yeah. And there are some other, we're also looking at more compassion focused and kind of trauma side of things. So thinking about when a parent has had a really traumatic experience, thinking about seeing their child go through anaphylaxis, how do we support that spectrum, not just the kind of everyday levels of anxiety. So we're trying to, you know, solve every kind of eventuality to help people feel supported.
So what we're describing there, I mean, we mentioned about online support. And is that a kind of an online course that somebody does, or is it as we might be, you know, having a chat now over a video camera, you do actually need to talk to a therapist.
So the interventions that I've developed, and again, this is some work that we will publish, the manuscript's just being written at the moment, I'm hoping to finish it over Christmas, but we basically ran groups. So these were two-hour groups, and they were spaced a week apart, and we involved children aged 11 to 17 years. We had adults, so 18 plus, and we also had a different group for parents. And we typically ran with 8 to 10 groups of participants in each group. And we delivered group workshops using cognitive behavioral therapy type skills, as well as other kind of psychological approaches. And the nice thing about having them a week apart was that people were able to practice those skills in between and come back and discuss. And obviously they were learning these psychological skills, but again, one of the things they found really helpful was speaking to other people who had a shared experience. And what we saw, we measured outcomes. So we looked at predominantly quality of life before the interventions at 1 month and at 3 months. And we compared them to a control group who received no interventions, but did get the outcome measures. So those questionnaires. And we had a really large effect on quality of life at 3 months. So this was something that people had obviously learnt and stayed with them, and they were able to keep practicing it. So I think that's really encouraging, because what we're hoping to do with the next stage of this work is to train non-psychologists to be able to deliver the workshops. So people join online.
Yes.
We were running them via Microsoft Teams and Zoom, and they could just join in an evening or weekend or whenever is convenient. I'm not sure. I have done some work around entirely guided websites, and we don't see the same effect. So I think it does require something about being able to engage with a therapist or someone facilitating the intervention, as well as like discussing with other people, because there's a lot of group exercises which I think people find really helpful.
I think the challenge for most people, I'd suggest, is actually being able to access that sort of what would you call it, an intervention, or you know, at least a group
workshop.
Are there things then that people can do individually or maybe as a family that would help, either doing something online, or are there things that they can ask their GP while they get to, you know, go to having that wait for the allergy clinic referral? What sort of things should somebody ask for?
Yeah, so I would say first things first, definitely look at Anaphylaxis UK and Allergy UK websites. They do have a lot of resources. we have a lot of resources on there. The other thing is, you know, if a parent or an adult, and I think in some patches of the country, children also have these improving access to psychological therapy. So those IAPT services, so these are the low intensity type interventions. I think you can self-refer in certain areas, or the GP can refer you. The only issue there is that they are typically not allergy focused, so you might not get someone who has a good understanding of the allergic condition as well, which is sometimes problematic, because I think some of the safety behaviors, like we were talking about, are needed to actually be safe from allergen, but sometimes they're safety behaviors which are employing, which end up keeping our problems going. So there can be some nuances there. The other thing to say, as I say, there's a number of resources that people can look through, and we'll try and put these in maybe in the YouTube comments or something, Simon, because what that does is it normalizes. So I think one of the problems that especially parents have spoken to me about is feeling like they're completely alone, or they're going completely mad with this kind of level of anxiety. And actually, I think it can be really helpful to hear someone else just explain their situations. And there's a lot of shared learning which goes on in these kind of forums, and it's usually lived experience people who are commenting about how they've coped with a certain situation. So I think that can be really helpful. The other thing is, there is a website called Get Self Help. I think it's .com or .co.uk. Again, we can check this out. And they've got really nice kind of web web resources, kind of downloadable resources around problem solving. So this is a really simple technique that we use in lots of different kind of psychological capacities. And it's about, you know, identifying a problem, making a plan, actioning it, reviewing it, seeing how well it's worked and trying something else. Because I think sometimes we get paralyzed by the thought of doing something and actually helping, you know, psychologically and from a behavior change perspective, actually making a plan and actioning it, regardless of the outcome, can be really helpful and motivating for individuals as well. So I think there are certain things we can do. And certainly, especially when you're thinking about those who are kind of newly diagnosed, most families, individuals say to me, knowledge is power. So they usually want to know as much as they can do about the actual allergic disease and all these sorts of things. So I think going to trusted resources, again, Anaphylaxis UK website, in terms of what is an allergy, you know, getting as much information as they can from those will feel like, you know, feel like your competence and self-efficacy is improving just from knowing about the actual disorder.
I mean, some of the work that we're currently busy doing is working with restaurants, working with schools and others, because, you know, what strikes me very much is that people, you know, they should have the confidence that they can go to a restaurant and they, you know, that restaurant should make them positively welcomed. People shouldn't be worried about having their children going to school.
Yeah.
You know, parents shouldn't be worried about having their children going for sleepovers. You know, you should be able to do these things.
Yeah.
And kids should interact with other kids, you know, like everybody else, and
yeah,
going on holiday, you know, but not everybody, you know, likes to do these things. But, you know, if you do, well, you should get on, you know, you should be able to just get on and do it.
Yeah.
And you know, what I'm very keen with Anaphylaxis UK is to try and build in those tools that make things possible and that brighter future for people.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, when people might be, you know, coming to you perhaps and saying, well, how am I ever going to go to a restaurant again? How am I ever going to go abroad?
Yeah.
You know, and we know that there are people that do.
Yeah.
And you can show them and teach them the skills on how to do that, I presume.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's complete, you know, it's an absolutely fair point that these are things that people should all be able to do. And I think there are pockets of incredibly good practice, which again is something where I think social media has a place where people share. So I know whenever I'm looking at kind of Facebook groups or Instagram groups, people have got kind of whole groups dedicated to where to eat out and all these sorts of things, where somewhere safe, we're going on holiday to X, what do you recommend? You know, is this possible with a family who may have multiple allergies, especially within one family? And I think it's all possible, but it does take time. And I think, you know, these places where good practices are shared or bad practices, you know, they're equally important to know where to, you know, legitimately avoid somewhere where some, you know, people might not be taking the allergy seriously. I think that these are great resources, and, you know, that's one thing, that one good side of the internet, I guess. And people, I know Twitter, there's a big debate about Twitter at the moment, but there are some real key figures within Twitter as well, where you can follow who again share these kind of good practices and top tips. And I think one of the things around the restaurant's situation, going on holiday, is about that assertive communication. Because I think, you know, you can only do what you can do in terms of asking. And if something doesn't feel transparent or you're concerned in any way, you know, just don't risk it. It's not worth it. But make sure you're able to have those assertive communications and don't feel like you're putting anyone out and all those sorts of things. So that's one of the things, especially with in the children's workshop that we ran, the children really wanted us to focus on, because, you know, they're at that awkward age where they're transitioning to independence anyway. Mm. So feeling like you're being pushy to adults can feel quite uncomfortable. So how do we, as I say, give those that kind of confidence and competence for young people? But it's not just young people. We all experience that from time to time, especially, you know, there can be stigma around food allergy as well. So it's trying to, as we say, educate everyone and raise awareness for everyone so that there's safety for our people who are living with food allergies.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now we'll definitely chat in the new year.
Yes.
about all the other exciting things with the research that you've done.
Yeah.
If you're up for that,
I'm very up for that, Simon.
That's great. Let's do that. So, Yeah, we've kind of run out of time. We could always, I mean, so I would say the same thing on each one of these calls. We could talk for a very long time, but I don't want to use any more of your time and keep, we'll get you on next year in a couple of months' time.
Feel free. Lovely.
And if you wouldn't mind sending those links over, yeah, we'll somehow work it out. I've only just worked out how you use YouTube, so people will have to bear with me.
It's okay. I think we might be able to put them in the comments box, but I'm not quite sure how to do it either. So we can learn together.
Yeah, there we are. Let's do that. Awesome.
Excellent.
Great to speak to you.
Thank you so much, Simon.
See you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found the discussion insightful and that it resonated with your experiences of navigating the relationship between allergies and mental health. Stay tuned for the rest of Anaphylaxis Awareness Week, running until October 7th, where we will be releasing a follow-up episode to this interview with Professor Chrissy Jones, recorded just last week. Together, we can continue to raise awareness and support each other in navigating the hidden battles associated with allergies. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast on your favourite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Music. Finally, be sure to follow us on social media at Anaphylaxis UK to join in the conversation. And let us know if there are any questions you would like us to answer next time.